We present The White Carnation by R.C. Sheriff, adapted for radio by Penny Lester, and starring Philip Voss as John Greenwood. It's midnight on Christmas Eve.
Oh, do come on, Tony.
Glad I haven't got to drive home. Mr. Greenwood rum punch.
Oh, Mary, darling, it's been a wonderful Christmas Eve.
It was nice of you to come, Sally.
Well, good night, Mary. Lovely party.
And don't forget to ask us next year.
Oh.
There's no need for that. Sally, it's definite. Good. Every year. Same party, the same time, the same guests.
Well, we shall be there.
Don't you worry.
It wouldn't be Christmas Eve if you didn't come. Oh, be careful of the pavement, Sally, dear. Oh. It's rather frosty.
Thank you, dear.
How long is your leave, Major Howard?
Oh, just Christmas, that's all.
Don't stand there catching cold, Mary.
It's all right, Tony. I never catch cold.
Freezing out here. Come on, you go along inside.
Oh, I'm quite all right, really.
You really ought to go.
Oh, Tony. For goodness sake, go in, Mary. There's no point in standing there.
Well, good night, everybody.
Good night. Good night.
Happy Christmas.
Hey, Greenwood, I've got a bone to pick with you.
Oh? What's that?
The Queen of Spades.
What do you mean, the Queen of Spades?
You know what I mean. The big card trick, the grand finale. The jolly old Queen of Spades comes oozing out of the pack and jumps across the room.
Oh, piece of elastic, old boy.
Yes, well, I forgot about it.
Forgot about it?
Come along, my dear.
Forgot about it? But you've done it every year for years and years.
Well, I didn't want to do it, that's all.
Oh, come on, Tony.
Everybody's shouting for it and you sitting there putting away your cards.
It's getting late, darling.
Poor old queen, that's what I said.
Thank you again for a lovely evening.
I mean, he's been doing it for years, so why not this year?
I can. Midnight already. Come along, my dear.
Oh, listen to the bell.
Good night, Greenwood.
It reminds me of the old days.
I wish Mary looked more like her old self.
She's all right, Sir George.
Bring her up to the country. I know us old fogies bore you city men, but it'll do Mary good.
I'm sure it will.
Well, happy New Year to you, and lots more luck on the stock exchange.
Thanks.
Good night, Mr. Greenwood. Tell Mary what a lovely evening it was.
I will.
Have a long
one. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Mary? Mary! What's happened to the lights? Are they fused? Oh, come on, Mary! I haven't got my key! Mary! Mary! Constable, it's me. My name's Greenwood.
What do you think you're doing?
It's my own house.
I'm afraid you've been celebrating, sir. Little Christmas party somewhere? You can't stay in here all night.
Yeah, but I tell you, it's my own house.
No, sir, you got a bit mixed up. It's been empty and shut up ever since I've been on this
beat. My wife and maids are here. They'll tell you whose house it is. Mary! Oh, for God's sake, where are you?
If it is your home, sir, then how come you break a window and climb in?
We were having a Christmas party. I went down to the gate to see my guests off. There was a gust of wind, front door slammed. I couldn't make anybody hear, so I had to break a window.
Did you cut yourself, sir?
Yes, here.
Funny, there's no blood.
It's probably the cold.
Well, if you just let me have your name, sir.
Greenwood. John Greenwood of Hanson and Greenwood, Moorgate Street. If you want my card, I'll go and get one for you. They're in my pocketbook upstairs.
There's no pocketbook of yours upstairs in this house, sir.
No, look, here, constable.
The reason being, there ain't no stairs. They were blown to bits years ago. This way, Sergeant. He says he won't accompany me to the station and he refuses to move from this house until he's seen you.
Why me?
He says he's an old friend of yours. Helps you out at the youth club boxing tournaments. He's in here.
Sergeant Phillips. I'm sorry to give you all this trouble.
Do you mind if I shine this torch on your face, sir?
It's me, Greenwood. I don't know what on earth... Sergeant? It's your old friend, John Greenwood. Sergeant?
No, never again. Never the strange, unthinking joy. Never the pain.
Christmas Eve, 7 years ago. I was at the corner of the High Street when I heard the sirens. The flying bombs were nearly over by that winter, but this one was definitely heading our way. I watched it go right over here. Then I heard the motor stop. I was the first to get here, before the air raid warden. Right through the roof it came, in the middle of that Christmas party of theirs. The whole lot stone dead from the blast.
Sergeant.
They say it was the last flying bomb of the war.
Yes. Well, Sergeant Phillips, we can only assume that in some extraordinary way, Mr. Greenwood escaped.
But he didn't, Mr. Gurney. I know he didn't. I got him out with my own hands.
It was dark. You must have been mistaken.
They buried him in Atworth Cemetery along with his wife. And there he was just now with that same smile on his face and same white flower in his coat, just as he was when we wrapped him up and carried him away 7 years ago.
You must apply your common sense and reason, Sergeant. Mr. Greenwood was a wealthy man. This fellow may well be an impostor trying to impersonate him and claim the estate.
He didn't look like an impostor to me, sir.
Impostors never do, Constable. If Mr. Greenwood is buried in Hackworth Cemetery, then it stands to reason that it's not him in the other room. Oh, Doctor, have you had a good look at him?
He's not drunk.
Well, what is it?
He would seem to be a healthy man in early middle age. He responds intelligently to questions. His movements and reactions are perfectly normal. But there's no circulation and no heartbeat. The temperature I do not know. There was no response to my thermometer.
It's impossible.
There is a slight odour of rum.
What do you suggest?
Oh, I have nothing to suggest. I refuse to take the case. I consider it to be a matter for the Home Office.
You put me in a very difficult position, Doctor. What am I going to do?
Well, the doctor seems to think I'm all right. Well, what's wrong now?
I didn't properly introduce myself when I arrived. I am Mr. Stapleton Gurney, a coroner for this district.
Oh, has there been an accident? It's not my wife.
No, it's not that. You probably know that my duties are somewhat varied. It's not always a matter of inquest upon persons recently deceased. I am sometimes called upon in certain other eventualities. When treasure is discovered or when bones are disinterred.
What's all this got to do with me?
Mr. Greenwood, we have clear evidence that you have been dead for 7 years.
What?
Sergeant?
It was a doodle bug, a flying bomb, Mr. Greenwood. Destroyed most of your house, and everyone at your Christmas party was killed.
Right. Well, I don't know whose idea this is. I can take a joke as well as any man, but there are limits, and the joke's misfired.
It is not a joke, Mr. Greenwood.
Why don't you tell me I'm a ghost and be done with it? The doctor's examined me, and he says I'm all right.
It placed your finger where normally you would feel your pulse.
But I was here with my friends, my wife, in this room, half an hour ago.
Yes, well, there have been rumours about this house. Lights, music, laughter.
I can only suggest that on every Christmas Eve, on the anniversary of that tragic party of yours, the events are in some way repeated in the form of a ghostly charade.
Well, if I'm here, why aren't the others?
Yes, well, apparently they have returned to... Well, as they did in other years, at midnight. You, in some way, have been left behind. I can think of no other explanation. I imagine you do intend to disappear.
I don't know. I've never tried.
You've been doing it for 7 years.
If I knew the way...
Would it help if I put the candles out, sir?
Don't leave the candles alone, Constable.
Perhaps you could try some long, deep breaths, Mr. Greenwood.
I'm not sure that I want to disappear.
But, my dear sir, you must.
Must? What colossal cheek, sir, to walk into a man's house without invitation and calmly tell him to disappear.
But you're not alive, and this is not your house.
It is my house.
It was your house on a long lease. It is legally impossible for a deceased person to own property. After your death, no relatives were traced.
I have no relatives, beyond my wife.
Exactly. On that account, your personal property passed into the hands of the Crown, and the lease of this house automatically reverted to the freeholders.
Then they'll have to return it to me.
But, my dear sir, you are merely a manifestation.
Call me what you like, but the point is that I'm here, and that I don't look like a ghost, and I don't feel like one. What's happened to my furniture, by the way?
What was salvaged was put into store, Mr. Greenwood, pending a final settlement.
Well, you might have it sent round, would you?
Impossible.
The morning will do. Clothes, slippers, wireless, books.
Curtains, sir.
Good idea, Constable.
I shall have to discuss it with the town clerk in the morning. In the meantime, if you settle down quietly, you may disappear in your sleep, and the whole thing will settle itself without any more fuss and trouble. Yeah, Doctor, Sergeant, you all understand, not a word of this to anybody. If a thing like this became public, I...
What's all the fuss about? All you need to do is say there was a mistake. I wasn't killed after all, and here I am, back again.
Oh, out of the question.
Why?
The town council.
Well, what have they got to do with it?
It's very complicated. I can only tell you that the council would never accept your suggestion.
But why not?
Because, my dear sir, you are buried in Hackworth Cemetery.
Just off the Watford bypass,
sir. If you insisted upon posing as the real Mr. Greenwood, then the authorities would no doubt apply to me as coroner for an exhumation order. They would confront you with your own body, and you wouldn't have a leg to stand on. Constable?
A room with a view, and you, and no one to worry us, no one to hurry us.
Ah, oh, morning, Mr. Gurney.
Well, Sergeant, is he gone?
No, sir.
What's he doing?
Putting up curtains with Constable Thompson.
Curtains?
Oh, and he wants to know whether he can join Boots Lending Library.
Certainly not.
Hardy Maxstreet.
Excuse us.
Steady, steady.
Sergeant, would you tell the removal men that they can return to their depository?
There's quite a bit more furniture in the van, sir.
There's ample here for the short time Mr. Greenwood will be staying with us.
Right, sir.
And, Sergeant, tell Constable Thompson to leave the curtains. I want a word with our Mr. Greenwood alone. I sat up with the town clerk until 5 o'clock this morning, reading the encyclopedia's section on ghosts.
Well, that's interesting.
In every case, without exception, the apparition disappears within a short time, usually after midnight.
Could you just...
What?
The chair. I think it looks best beside the fireplace. The Mary always...
Mr. Greenwood.
Yes?
The town clerk and I found no known case of a ghost actually staying the night.
Do sit down, Mr. Gurney.
What? Oh, thank you. Now, I understand there's a very good spiritualist. Mr. Greenwood.
Just a moment. That's better. Bought them as a pair, you see.
There's a very good spiritualist medium in the town. I'm sure she'd be able to help you to return to the place you came from. If we send her round, will you accept her help?
Certainly not. I don't believe in spiritualism.
My dear fellow,
why are you so desperately anxious to get rid of me?
The local council has bought this property for a new block of flats. They want to pull it down early in the new year. If you can't disappear, or won't disappear...
The house is mine, Mr. Gurney.
If you persist in claiming a right to live in this house, then the council will be forced to prove their own legal claim by going to Hackworth Cemetery and digging you up, and everybody would know you for what you really are.
Now, surely the small inconvenience of moving...
Moving?
A house in exchange.
And you would agree to some story that I wasn't killed?
Oh, I think the town clerk and I have found the perfect place. Lord Cranmer's old castle in Cranmer Park. It's very suitable. There's a moat, a drawbridge...
And if I wasn't killed...
Battlements...
I could claim all my money back.
Remarkable views from the top.
Tell me, Gurney, how long would it take to get Cranmer Castle ready?
Oh, about a week. In the meantime, we're taking precautions to allay curiosity in the neighbourhood by saying that this house is temporarily let to a Mr. Davies of Tasmania, a distant relative of the previous owner.
When I get my money back, I'll have a complete new wardrobe and modern furniture for the new house.
So I'll be round tomorrow with the draft agreement, and I hope I shall have some good news about the fitting up of the castle.
I'll be starting life again, here forever and ever. And I shan't get any older.
Mr. Greenwood?
Mr. Gurney? Oh, goodbye. And give my regards to the town clerk.
Dance, 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 little lady, do the beat into the rhythm beating in your mind. Dance, 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 little lady, so obsessed with second best, the rest
will... You're doing a splendid job, Constable Thompson. Though I fear you have missed a hawk.
I have, sir.
On the left curtain.
Oh, right, sir.
You know, I've rather disorganised your routine.
Ah, no need to worry about that, sir. Bit of a change to get off the beat for a while.
Yes, that's the one.
Thank you, sir. You know, sir, if we play our cards right, we can make a packet out of this. You'll be the richest man in England, and I'll get that little farm in Kent I've dreamed about all my life. An old aunt of mine was fat lady at the Wembley Exhibition of 1926. Worked on commission and cleaned up 20 quid a week, plus 50% on a picture postcards.
Are you suggesting I put myself on show?
It's money for jam. There hasn't been a real ghost show in living history. We'll do it high class, of course.
Oh, go and see who that is, would you, Constable?
Oh, right, sir. But you'll have a think about it, sir. If we play our cards right...
I'm sorry, Thompson. Cranmer Castle or a billing with the fat lady. I never cared much for the castle.
Oh, hello. Isn't it terribly exciting? Are you waiting to see the ghost?
Thompson!
It's quite all right. I've got a permit from the town clerk. Do you want to see it?
You're not this spiritualist, this medium.
Oh, no, nothing like that. Are you expecting one?
Do you mind explaining why the town clerk gave you a permit?
He's my uncle.
I see.
How did you get one?
Me? Oh, well, I'm interested in these sort of things.
Do you think it's really true?
Well, I suppose...
Well, I'm not going to believe it until I see it. Do you think we shall have to wait until midnight?
It's only just gone 4.
I'll wait all night if I have to. I'd give anything to see a ghost.
Is the town clerk going to give permits to all his relatives?
Oh, no. He was dead against giving me one. Just a wangle, really. You've heard the queer things they say about this house, haven't you?
Not much.
Well, every Christmas Eve says the flying bomb. Lights, music, voices. Well, I've always been thrilled by that sort of thing.
Well, didn't you feel frightened? Coming to an empty house alone, with a ghost in it?
But I knew there was a policeman here. Now you're here, too. There's nothing to be frightened of.
Supposing I hadn't been here, and you'd sat here all alone in the dark, and suddenly the ghost had appeared. What would you have done then?
Probably shrieked my head off and jumped out of the window.
What are you going to do now when you see it?
Well, I suppose I'll do whatever you do. You're an expert, are you? Psychic investigator?
No. I'm as much in the dark as you are.
Well, why did they let you come, then?
They didn't. I came on my own.
I thought that policeman had strict orders.
Yes, I expect he has. I'm afraid you're going to be rather disappointed. But you see, I am the ghost.
What? Why didn't you tell me when I came in?
I'm sorry. Are you frightened?
No.
Disappointed?
No, I don't quite know what I feel.
Do you want to go?
Do you want me to?
Why not sit down?
Thank you.
You know, I never got your name.
It's Truscott, Lydia Truscott.
Now, when you decided to come here, what did you honestly mean to do when you saw the ghost? Did you expect to talk to it, or just stare at it?
I just wondered... Is there anything I can do to help you?
I don't suppose you know anything about ghosts.
Me?
Well, I feel such a fool when they ask their questions. You see, I know nothing. Absolutely nothing.
About ghosts?
I still can't believe I am one. If they hadn't told me, I'd never have known.
I suppose we usually only notice the queer-looking ones without heads.
You think the world is full of ghosts?
Or perhaps somebody on the other side has discovered a way of getting spirits back to Earth, and you're the trial kite, the guinea pig.
Well, if that were true, surely they'd experiment with experts. They wouldn't begin by sending a stockbroker who doesn't know a thing about it.
No, I don't suppose they would. Perhaps you've come back like all the others do.
What do you mean?
Well, personal reasons. Spirits return to Earth because they're unhappy about something.
I'm not unhappy.
Uneasy.
I'm not uneasy either.
Worried about something you failed to do when you were on Earth.
I never failed in anything. I began as an office boy and finished up senior partner.
Well, perhaps you've been unkind to somebody and you've been sent back to redeem yourself, put things right.
Everything was right. I paid my people well, and they got their Christmas bonus.
In that case, you must have just come back by accident.
Accident?
I imagine you'll be wanting to get back as soon as possible.
Why should I?
Well, it must be very lonely. I mean, last night you were all together. Your friends and your wife. Must have been a shock for them when they suddenly found you weren't with them any longer.
I don't think they're going to miss me.
Really?
I imagine when a flying bomb makes a direct hit on a husband and wife, it automatically dissolves the bonds of marriage. And as for those other people, they were her friends. I always let her ask her own that night. They bored me to distraction, but I put up with them for her sake. Of course, if they'd been my friends, then I'd feel it my duty to do something about it. But I'm certain she's perfectly happy without me. Cigarette?
No, thank you.
In fact, I think the whole thing's a very good arrangement. Now I'm free, I'm going to enjoy myself. I'm going to have lots of fun. But I can't do much dressed like this. They're sending my ordinary clothes tomorrow. Directly I get out of this confounded dinner jacket,
I'd be careful about that if I were you.
What?
I wouldn't touch anything you've got on for the time being.
Why?
I don't know much about these things, but... Well, look at the carnation in your buttonhole. I can smell the scent of it. It's as fresh as when you put it there for that Christmas Eve party 7 years ago. It's part of what you are, if you see what I mean.
Are you suggesting I've got to go on wearing this dinner jacket and this carnation day in and day out?
I've never heard of a ghost that changed its clothes, have you? I mean, you're lucky to be dressed as you are. Some ghosts have to go about with great rusty chains round their ankles or swords right through them.
What do you suppose would happen if I took them off?
I don't know. It's only my personal opinion, but I think you only exist as a ghost in a dinner jacket with a white carnation in the buttonhole.
Well, if you want my personal opinion, I think you're talking a lot of sheer rubbish.
Well, all right, then go ahead and do whatever you think. Put on grey flannels and a sports jacket and see what happens.
I thought you didn't smoke.
Well, I smoke my own, thank you.
Light. You light your own. I understand. You seem to know a lot of unpleasant things about ghosts. Don't you know anything cheerful? Encouraging?
I just thought you'd like me to tell you of the things to be careful about. I mean, supposing you offered to see me home, and I didn't warn you of what might happen. Well, you'd walk down the steps of this house, and you'd go out like a candle.
I what?
Surely you know that. Every ghost has its own haunt. Narrow walk, ruined castle. Well, just a few yards, and when they move away... But they disappear.
Are you telling me I'm a prisoner of this house?
Not a prisoner. You can come and go. You've done that every year. But when you go, you'd have to go back to the place you came from. I don't think you could go to Brighton.
Have you been sent here by those people to frighten me?
Oh, well, if you think that, I'd better go.
That fellow Gurney, he was here this morning. Do you know, he was actually trying to persuade me to move into that castle in Cranmer Park. I knew there was something fishy about it. A dirty, low-down trick to get rid of me.
Why do they want to move you?
Well, they want to pull this place down for some building scheme.
It's awkward, isn't it?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, if I don't want to move, they can't make me.
I'd be careful what you say to them.
Why? What can they do?
I don't know, but I doubt they'll give up a building scheme to oblige you.
Miss Truscott, will you come here again? Will you come and see me?
If I can. I'd have to give some reason.
Well, tell them I want to disappear, but don't quite know how. And I've asked you to come along and help me.
Do you think they'd believe it?
It'd keep them quiet for a bit.
I'll try. Do you really mean you want to disappear?
No, why should I? I'm going to stay here and enjoy myself for 1,000 years.
Dance, 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 little lady, do the beating to the rhythm beating in your mind. Dance, 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 little lady, so obsessed with second best, no best you ever find.
Time and time and trouble. I've got the radio time, sir. There's a good thing on the Oak Service tomorrow night at 9:15. Highlights of the post-war years. Everything that's happened to you since you died, in a nutshell.
I'm not interested in that. And I don't want these absurd bulletins of the day's news. It's the permanent things that matter to me now. Fine music, great drama, philosophy. Things like that live forever.
Is that your hobby?
It's going to be. Now that I've got the radio and these books, God knows I've waited long enough for them.
Can I give you an answer?
Oh, good man. Put them in alphabetical order for me, will you?
Have you thought any more about that idea of mine?
I'm sorry, Thompson. I don't like
it. We can make a packet of money if we organise it properly. We could rope off this side of the room and get 20 people in for each show.
But there's nothing to show them. I'd look just like any ordinary man. They'd say it was a swindle and want their money back.
Not if you were to do something sensational.
And what do you suggest?
Well, supposing you were to disappear for, say, half a minute, then come back and give a few words about where you went and what it felt like. We'd pack the place for months.
No.
If you let me take my 5%.
But what about me? Standing here for hours on end, coming on and going off like a whiskey sign in Piccadilly Circus. You'll have to get your farm in Kent some other way.
Well, if I was a ghost and you were a policeman, I wouldn't let you down. I wouldn't sit in a room like this all day reading books. I'd cash in, right and left, and see you got your share. After all, I was the one who discovered you.
Ah, Miss Truscott. Go and let her in, Thompson.
We could sell mementos, imitation white flowers, little bits of souvenir dinner jackets.
Oh, really? Now... Liber primus, qui fit meisen. Oh, my God. The thing's in Latin.
Hello. It's a lovely morning. And you've got a crocus in the garden. Oh, they've sent your books.
At last. So, what are they up to now?
Oh, nothing. Just waiting for me to go back one day and say I've done the trick. It's over a month now. They're getting impatient. Why haven't you faded away?
I'll think up some other story.
Scott. Dickens. Homer. Aristotle, I didn't think you were a highbrow.
Well, I'm not. At least not yet. But I had a wonderful idea this morning.
Mm.
I never had much chance when I was a boy, but I always had a tremendous longing to improve myself, to read all the great books. When I made my first real money, I went to a bookseller and asked him to make me up a little library of the finest books ever written. Mm. I shall never forget the glorious feeling of achievement when they arrived. I made up my mind to set aside 2 hours a night and read them, undisturbed. And when I'd finished the last page of the last book, I would be able to go anywhere and talk to anybody without being ashamed.
Did you read them all, right through?
Well, no, I didn't. When I discovered I had a gift for making big money, it didn't seem necessary to bother about Darwin and Aristotle. I used to work in the office till all hours of the night, and the only thing I ever read was the Financial Times.
And now you're really going to enjoy them.
Every page, every word. Qui fit meinas. You know, maybe, just maybe, I was sent back to achieve my boyhood dream. I shall read in the morning and make notes. I shall write in the afternoons. And in the evenings, I shall listen to the best things on the radio. Symphonies, fine plays, poetry, opera.
Did you say you haven't used any of these books?
Well, I've hardly opened them yet.
They've all been read, you know.
Oh, they couldn't have been.
Well, look, in this book of poems, somebody's copied out the lines there.
That's my wife's writing. You see what I mean about her now. That's typical. I gave her plenty of money. She could have bought all the books she wanted, but she had to mess about with mine.
It's nice to think she enjoyed them.
That's not the point. The whole pleasure of a book is to cut the pages yourself and be the first to read it. They might as well be a lot of old second-hand stuff now.
If I left books lying around for 20 years, I'd be rather glad to think they'd made somebody happy in the meantime.
The way you women stick together. You never even knew Mary, and now you calmly say she's right and I'm wrong.
I'm sorry, but you've made me think of her so often, I feel I know her quite well now.
I've never said a word about her, except that first evening.
But you've often made me think of her in little things you've said.
I don't know what you mean.
You weren't happy, were you?
I'm not blaming her. It was just one of those things. I was a self-made man. Unlike most men who rise from nothing, I was rather a snob. Tremendously ambitious about society and all that sort of thing. I met Mary at the Leicestershire Hunt Ball. She was the daughter of an earl, and she wasn't really bad-looking herself.
Did you fall in love with her?
I think so. The thought of my children with the blood of the earls of Wrexham in them went to my head like a magnum of champagne.
What happened afterwards?
Nothing.
No children?
I don't blame her for that. But I do for a lot of other things. She never attempted to understand my business or my friends. If I gave a dinner party, she'd sit there like a dummy. If she opened her mouth at all, she'd say some idiotic thing about a bird or a squirrel she'd seen in the garden. And she always chose the exact moment when I was on the point of bringing off some deal I'd been leading up to with an important guest. Everything I said was wasted, and the guest would have to talk about squirrels for the rest of the evening. Influential men I badly needed would go away bored stiff, and that didn't do my business any good.
No, naturally it wouldn't.
I tried not to believe it at first. I tried to find reasons and excuses for her. But in the end, I had to face the fact that she was just a fool. And as for those friends of hers, all they ever talked about were their country seats, hunting and shooting, and Lady Wallace. Could she go on about her concertos, the clarinet and flute?
Look, I don't want to be inquisitive, but did you do this on purpose?
Do what on purpose?
Slip away from that party and get left behind deliberately.
Oh, good heavens, no, I wouldn't do a thing like that. Do you know, maybe, just maybe, I was sent back as a reward for all those years I had to put up with the irritation and disappointment. I never grumbled, you know. I was never unfaithful or cruel to Mary. I accepted everything as it came, patiently. Don't you think I've been given this as a reward?
I think the vicar could answer that better than I can. He's coming to see you today.
The vicar?
My uncle thought it might be a good thing if he came to see you.
Why?
Oh, I think he held some kind of service, wants to get rid of a ghost in a farmhouse somewhere.
You mean he wants to expurgate me?
They call it exorcism.
I'm not going to see him. I'm not going to have him burning incense and hanging garlic.
He's a dear old man.
I'm sick and tired of these people they send. The other day it was the photographer. I've never had so many pictures taken in all my life.
Yes, I saw them.
Are they good?
You didn't come out.
Hello.
Oh, good morning, Reverend Pendlebury. Now, don't worry, Mr. Greenwood. Isn't it a lovely day, Vicar?
Yes, almost spring-like, Miss Truss.
You'll come tomorrow.
In the morning. Goodbye.
Goodbye. I really only called to leave a copy of our magazine. It's kind of you to see me, Mr. Greenwood.
Well, it's good of you to come. Won't you sit down?
Thank you. Yes. I don't think I ever had the pleasure of seeing you at our church.
No. I'm afraid I wasn't really much of a churchgoer. Wouldn't you like to put your bag down somewhere?
Oh, no, it's quite all right, really. It's quite small.
Well, may I put it outside for you? In the hall?
No, it's perfectly all right, thank you. It's not in the way. I've never shared the opinion of those who believe that a ghost is evil just because it happens to be a ghost.
Really? Look, I'm not doubting your good intentions, but what have you got in that bag?
Nothing... Nothing of importance, I assure you.
Now, do you mind opening it and showing me?
Well, really, sir, I...
Will you open that bag?
If you insist. Although I gave my word.
Bananas?
Yes. My wife and I are very fond of them. And my greengrocer happens to be my church warden. He assured me that no one in greater need would be deprived. Rations, you understand. But very naturally, he asked me not to flaunt them around the parish. I don't know whether you, take bananas?
No. Thank you. I must apologize. My nerves are on edge. I've had a bad day. This exorcism business. Miss Truscott tells me you've had something to do with this sort of thing yourself.
I? Oh, you mean that old farmhouse in Lincolnshire. Well, I only went to watch, you know. I took no part in the service.
Well, what happened?
Well, for years, the occupants were troubled by unaccountable knockings. and they called in a priest to hold a service of exorcism. The knocking went on for a while, and then it stopped. Actually, it was the ball cock of an old lavatory system.
You mean the service stopped it?
Well, for a little while, but it began again the next day.
Well, if he couldn't stop a ball cock, I don't imagine it could stop a ghost.
That's exactly what I thought myself.
You seem to be an understanding man. Huh. How do you suppose this happened?
I don't know. One of these days it may be quite simple to understand. We always think of this other world as something remotely up in the sky somewhere, but it may not be up there at all. It may be all around us, separated from us by, well, some kind of blindness in our understanding. Just as sounds in wireless waves are silent until we turn the knob on a machine. The other world may move in some kind of wave like that, very close to us, and then something happens. Some tiny upset that disturbs the delicate order of it all. Or something may have given you a slight swerve that night. The vibration from the Christmas bells, the shock of a slamming drawer. A similar occurrence at the right moment will probably take you back. The experts seem to attach a good deal of importance to the disturbance set up by radio.
We were taking the national program. That was the wartime one.
Yes, yes.
It was light opera music, I think.
Well, they all seem to agree that your radio had some part in it. Tonight, how do we know? Somebody may turn on the radio, tune to a certain wavelength, and in a flash you may be gone.
Oh, yes, who is it?
Oh, good afternoon.
Oh.
I expect you are Mr. Davis.
Oh.
Mrs. Carter, your next-door neighbour. Vicar, hello.
Mrs. Carter.
The front door was open. I saw your man talking to the milkman, and I thought you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, well, I think perhaps I'd better be leaving you now.
Oh, but I'm so sorry I'm interrupting.
Yeah, no, not at all, Mrs. Carter. Now, I'll leave a copy of our parish magazine. There's a fine message from the bishop on page 3.
Oh, thanks. Oh, goodbye, Vicar. I hope you'll come again.
Why, of course, I should be delighted if you're still here. If I may. Yes. Goodbye, Mrs. Carter.
Reverend Pendlebury, when I heard you'd come from Tasmania, I knew at once we'd be friends. My daughter is in Hobart, and she writes to me almost every month. It sounds such a lovely place. Do the men wear evening dress over there in the mornings?
Oh, yes. You see, your day is our night. Won't you sit down?
Thank you. Oh, it's strange to be in this old room again. It's over 10 years since I last came in and sat here by the fire with Lady Mary. When I knew you came from Tasmania, I hunted out these photographs, because I'm sure you'll be interested. There's my daughter, taken on the beach at Sandy Bay last year with Donald and his first little pair of trousers. Donald's my grandson.
Oh, yes, very interesting. So, you knew Lady Mary?
Oh, yes. Poor Lady Mary, she was so nice, but so terribly lonely and unhappy. And there's Donald, taken this year in the same trousers. You can see just how much he's grown.
Yes. Why should Mary have been unhappy?
Well, did you know the husband?
Mr. Greenwood?
It's not right to speak against people when they're dead, but he wasn't a nice man, you know. And there's such a charming snapshot of Donald after Beatrice had let his trousers out at the bottoms. That's the tame kiwi he's playing with. A birthday present from his father.
Yes. Why wasn't he a nice man?
Jim?
Who's Jim?
My son-in-law.
No, I'm not talking about your son-in-law. I mean Mr. Greenwood.
Oh, him. Oh, he's been dead for years. But Lady Mary never said a word against him. No matter what he did, she always tried her best to make us think he was good to her. Ah, that's Jim, my son-in-law. And that's Mount Wellington in the background.
How well did you know Lady Mary's husband?
I never met him. He didn't have any use for people who weren't any good for his business.
If you only knew him through his wife and she spoke well of him, I wonder what made you say he wasn't a nice man.
Well, I had a Daly girl who was housemaid with them at one time, and she told me all about the horrid things he did.
Horrid things?
How he would snub his wife and ridicule her in front of his guests. Such vulgar men he had to dinner, company promoters and people like that. All they ever talked about was money. And she came from such a fine, cultured family. I see you've got his books. Lady Mary used to show me them. You know, Mr. Davis, one mustn't judge people. There must have been something nice about him to have wanted books like that. Even that housemaid liked him, in a way. Because, well, that's why she left. I remember one afternoon how wonderfully happy Lady Mary was because he'd promised to take her to the theatre. First time for years. But they didn't go. He'd forgotten all about it. He ran up at 7 o'clock and didn't even ask to speak to her. He just told the butler that an American client had arrived and he was having dinner with him in London. It was the only time I ever saw her cry. I'm so sorry. Am I boring you?
No, not at all.
I'm afraid I am. I could go on for hours about her because she was such a lovable person. But then, of course, I knew her. And you didn't.
Here, what's all this?
It's all right, Thompson. This is my next-door neighbour, Mrs. Carter.
You remember. I saw you this morning at the gate.
Well, it's nice of you to come.
Well, then, you must come and see me whenever you like.
There's a show, Mrs. Carter. Out, will you, Thompson?
This way, madam.
There's really no need. I do know the house.
Thompson!
Yes, sir?
See to it that she doesn't get in ever again.
I certainly will. Gave me quite a turn. Hey, there's a good tea-time concert on the light programme.
Leave it alone.
Sir?
Switch it off.
But it's a light opera selection. You'll enjoy that.
I told you to leave that damn thing alone.
Liber secundus. Sunt quibus in satura thy dear. See note one. Note one. We may infer from the one letter of Liber Primus ad fam 722. Oh, Lord.
Financial Times, sir.
Oh, good man. Oh, wonderful to see this old friend again.
There's a message come through to the police station from Whitehall, sir, the Home Office. I was told to say there's an important gentleman coming down today.
Yes, yes.
You read all these books, sir?
Yes, I've done with those.
Essays of Cicero, Pilgrim's Progress, Satires, Epistles, Ars Poetica, and all in one morning. You did half read quick.
Oh, I haven't read them. Look at this. Amalgamated Rubber, 29 6/6 dividend. I floated those shares in 1934 when the Japs invaded Borneo, and people said I was crazy. And look at these. United Chemicals, 57 and threepence, up a shilling yesterday. That was another of mine. You want to buy a farm, don't you, Thompson?
You know I do, sir.
How much have you got put by?
Just under £200.
Would you like me to turn that 200 into 2,000 for you?
No, thanks. I ain't that sort of gambler.
Oh, you won't be gambling if you do what I tell you. We'll start with Vulcan Rubber and Phoenix Tin.
Sounds fine, sir, but it doesn't look as if I'll be seeing you any more after this evening.
Why not?
New orders, sir. Downright insulting, I call them.
Well, what are they? No, it's all right. You needn't spare my feelings.
Well, they say it isn't healthy for ordinary people to be in the same room with you more than they can help. I never heard of anybody catching anything off a ghost, but the wife's got a baby coming next October, and the sergeant says if I'm with you too much, it might be born transparent.
Well, when are you going?
Tonight, sir, when my duty ends at 8 o'clock.
Well, you've been here quite a while, Thompson. I shall miss you.
I'd stay like a shot if I had my way, sir. I could do all right at Blackpool with a transparent baby. But I got to obey orders, and that's all there is to it.
Am I going to be left in this house alone?
Seems like it, sir. There's some talk about closing this place right up till you've gone or until they pull it down. That means you won't have no more Financial Times and nobody to play gin rummy with any longer. Cruelty, I call it.
Oh, there's no need to waste your sympathy on me. I shan't be lonely. I've got 1,000 more important things to do than play gin rummy. I've got the whole of time to play with. Ah, that's Miss Truscott. Go and let her in.
No, sir, it isn't Miss Truscott. She told me to say she wouldn't be along until this evening.
Why?
She was called to London. More of this questioning. They've been putting poor Miss Truscott through it. That'll be the Home Office, gentlemen.
Who?
I just told you, sir. Sir Horace Duncan's his name, and I'd be pleasant with him if I were you.
And the Home Office gave very careful consideration to the findings of the Commission and came to the conclusion that it was a matter beyond their immediate authority, Mr. Greenwood. We accordingly passed all the documents to the Ministry of Health, The Ministry of Health considered that matter very carefully and decided that their responsibility terminated with the death and burial of those under its control. They accordingly referred the whole matter to the Office of Works. The Office of Works reported that their authority extends to buildings which have been formally scheduled as ancient monuments. They refused to accept the house of no distinction, and they couldn't, of course, accept you without the house. The matter was accordingly discussed in Cabinet, and the Prime Minister gave instructions for all the documents to be handed over to the Chancellor of the Duchy of Lancaster.
Why was that?
He happened to have a little time on his hands. Oh. And he accepted the responsibility in a very public-spirited way. He gave the matter very full and careful consideration and passed it back to the Home Office. Oh. As you can see, nothing has been left undone. Now, as you know, we at the Home Office are very concerned in questions of illegal entry into this country.
Sir Horace, I was born in this country, and I've always been a British citizen.
The committee informs me that a person automatically ceases to be a British citizen upon his death. On that account, you entered this country illegally.
But you allow some foreigners
in. Only from countries in which we have an ambassador or chargé d'affaires.
I see. Well, that makes it very difficult.
Yes.
Don't you think this is all rather silly?
It may appear so to you, Mr. Greenwood. We have no legal authority over a ghost. But the Attorney General has seen a way to overcome that limitation. The Commission reports that you have substance and solidity. On the other hand, you are not a normal man. The Attorney General has therefore decided that you are an ectoplasm.
An ectoplasm?
You will find it fully explained in this official document. The reasoning, to my mind, is unassailable and final.
Well, where does all this get you?
It overcomes the problem I've just explained. You are an ectoplasm, and therefore not a ghost. If you are not a ghost, you automatically come within the control of the Home Office. Now, if you read the report carefully, you will see that an ectoplasm cannot, under any circumstances, be a British citizen.
Why don't you just leave me quietly alone? I won't do anything. I shan't make any trouble.
This is a law-abiding country, Mr. Greenwood. Everything and everybody must be subject to some form of government control. Otherwise, there'd be anarchy.
But if I can't go, then that's the end of it. You can't deport me.
No, that would be a matter for the Foreign Office. But I understand you have expressed great confidence in a young lady who's trying to assist you.
Yes.
She's been coming to see you for 6 months now.
Yes.
What have you so far achieved?
Well, it's very difficult. We've had some interesting talks.
In the opinion of the Home Office, Mr. Greenwood, interesting talks are not enough. Now, first of all, I must deal with a matter that concerns an innocent person who may suffer very seriously. I refer, of course, to Miss Truscott herself.
How can she suffer?
We have reason to believe you are exercising an unnatural influence over this young lady that may very well have tragic results.
Are you suggesting I'm a vampire? A sort of Dracula?
The danger lies in our ignorance of these things, not in our knowledge. None of us knows what terrible results may come from these continual visits. The atmosphere of this room. She came here in the first place out of a sincere desire to help you. If you have the least regard for her happiness, you will show it by forbidding her to come here any more.
Miss Truscott will come here whenever she wants to.
And now, this other matter. The Home Office has granted you official permission to stay here for 6 months. When the permit expires, the house will be pulled down. 6 months, Mr. Greenwood. It is now June. In December, we shall pull the house down, and that will be the end of you.
Well, I'm off now, sir.
Goodbye, Thompson.
Is there any little thing I can do for you before I go?
No, I don't think so.
Well, good luck, sir.
Thompson.
Sir?
Tell Miss Truscott I thank her for all she's done. But she's never to come back here again.
No, never again. No.
never the strange, unthinking joy, never the pain. Let me be wise. Let me learn to doubt romance. Try to live without romance. Let me be there.
Oh, what is that infernal noise?
What? Just the same. Good evening, sir. Happy Christmas.
Why, Thompson, what are you doing here?
Good evening, Mr. Greenwood.
What's all this?
Bad news, I'm afraid. We all sincerely hoped that you had gone.
Well, I haven't. So what is it? And what's that confounded thumping down there?
You've got till midnight, Mr. Greenwood. Then the house will be destroyed. That gives you exactly half an hour.
But if you blow this place up, you'll wreck all the houses in this street.
The house will be collapsed, not blown up.
Bruce, what's going on? Excuse me.
Engineers have constructed a tunnel from the garden. They're under the cellars now. A small charge and down it'll come like a pack of cards.
Do you realize what you're saying? If you do that, you'll have a murder on your hands.
There will be no murder. The doctor will make sure of that. Doctor!
Doctor, what's he going to do?
He has his instructions.
No. What are they doing now?
I'm not sure that I know, Doctor.
It's a lucky thing I went down there to have a look, Mr. Gurney. The engineer says the town clerk told him to push the hand at 11:30.
But they knew we were here.
It must have been a mistake, then.
Yes. Well, of course it was. Well, we must hurry, Constable. Take this table away. Right. That's my table.
It is not your table. It came from the lobby in the town hall. Take it out, Constable.
All right, sir.
Doctor, I shall wait for you outside.
Right.
I've done everything I can, Mr. Greenwood. Is there any message you would like me to convey to the authorities?
No, I don't think so.
Then I will leave you with the doctor. I'm afraid it's only a formality, but... Goodbye.
What is it you want to do?
I have orders to confirm that you're in the same condition as you were when I first examined you.
Why? You think I might have changed?
Turn this way, please.
And if I have, does that mean...
If there's change, then the necessary arrangements have been made.
There would be somewhere for me to go.
Arrangements have been made. And how have you been feeling?
Lonely. That's all. As lonely.
No, I shall have to ask you to turn up your sleeve. Mr. Greenwood.
I've told those maids 1,000 times to make up that fire directly we go into supper.
But they never do.
Hilda was the only one who really knew the way to keep up a good fire.
It was such a pretty sight. The village people with their dear little lanterns. Oh, Mr. Greenwood, where did you get your Christmas tree?
Covent Garden, actually, Lady Wallace. Not as big as usual, but there seems to have been a run on them.
I knew that fellow Runstead's a good girl.
Oh, yes. I didn't know, but it's too late now.
Indeed, we are holding firm around the bulge. When the weather clears, you'll find we will get
busy. Oh, yes, Mary, may I take something off the tree now?
Oh, very well.
Hello, hello. Oh, Sally, take a look up there.
Oh, Miss
Salter. Oh, come along, Sir George, your turn.
Sure, my dear chap, too old for that sort of way.
Too old? Rubbish. Come along, Mr. Wallace.
You haven't forgotten.
Oh, your turn now, Mary.
Oh, no. Please, Tony.
Tony, silly. Hey, Greenwood, old boy. Your wife's got a date with you over here.
Oh, yes.
Mary.
Come on. Last but not least, old chap.
You look lovely tonight, Mary.
John, when I wore this dress last time, you said I looked awful.
Did I?
Am I imagining things, or is that a bowl of punch I see before?
Don't give Tony too much.
No, I won't. Yes.
Ah. Now, what about the card tricks, old boy?
Yes.
Down last year.
Poor old Queen of Spades, eh? You cut her up.
We're on the Queen of Spades. We want the Queen of Spades.
That is nothing up my sleeves. So,
Take your cards. Yes, only one. One each now. Just have a look at them. And are you ready? Put them back any way you like.
Do you hear that?
Oh, horrible.
It's all right. It won't do us any harm. Sir George, will you shuffle?
Right here.
Now, you all remember your cards.
Yes.
Now, don't tell him. No.
Doodlebug, isn't it? Flying
boss. It's a long way off. Don't worry. Now, watch carefully. Lady Wallace, the Four of Diamonds.
Oh, how
Howard, the Ace of Clubs. Mary, the Three of Spades. Sir George, the King of Diamonds. Sally, the Knave of Hearts.
Absolutely right.
And Tony, the Nine of Cups. And for me...
That was the last
thing you watch it fly out.
For me, the Queen of Spain.
Mary.
Yes, John?
It's all right, my dear. We're together. We're always going to be together.
A room with a view, and you, and no one to worry us, no one to hurry us through. This dream we found.
That was The White Carnation by R.C. Sherriff, adapted for radio by Penny Lester, and starring Philip Voss as John Greenwood. Danny Schiller was P.C. Thompson, Roger Hammond, Mr. Gurney, Karen Archer, Lydia Truscott, and John Moffat, the Vicar. Other parts were played by Vincent Brimble, Mary Allen, Michael Kilgariff, James Green, Melinda Walker, Simon Treves, and Danielle Allen. Technical presentation was by Simon Moorcroft, and the production assistant was Nikki Hildebrand. This was a BBC World Service drama production, directed by David Hitchens.